And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. You're very welcome along to Friday's 9 to Noon Show. It is 3 minutes past 9 on this wintry 28th of June. How you all keeping? I hope you're very well indeed. We've got a great show for you for the next 3 hours. The next hour, until 10 o'clock at least, is about our Friday panel. And our Friday panel this morning is Councillor Ali Farn, 100% Redress Party. Good morning to you, Councillor. How are you getting on?
Great.
Good to have you with us. Senator Lisa Chambers is going to be joining us in a moment. I'll go to Senator Chambers in a moment. I'll say good morning first to Grainne Hines, member of Letterkenny Active Retirement. Good morning to you, Grainne. Grainne, are you there? I'm going to have to kick Grainne out and bring her back in again, I think, which is okay. I can say good morning now to Senator Lisa Chambers. Hi, Lisa. How are you keeping?
Hi, Greg. Hi, everyone.
Good to have you with us. Grainne is going to be joining us very, very shortly. I want to invite you at home to get involved in the conversation as well. At home, I say, but whether you're out and about or whatever it might be, you can WhatsApp and text us on 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000, or if you wish to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com. Can I say good morning now to Grainne Hines, member of Letterkenny Active Retirement? Good morning, Grainne. I can't quite hear you. You might have to unmute yourself, Grainne. I'll come to you in a moment, if that's okay. On to some of our topics. Now, the Dáil has voted to opt into the EU Asylum and Migration Pact by a margin of just 79 to 72 votes. The pact was debated in the House both this week and last, though. That would give an impression more time was dedicated to it than was. The government had argued that Ireland must look across the European Union for solutions to rising levels of migration rather than isolate itself. Sinn Féin said Ireland must opt out of the majority of its provisions, otherwise the hands of future Irish governments will be tied. Ain Tús Padraig Tobin said it's an absolute disgrace that the government has agreed to opt into the new EU migration pact without knowing how much it may eventually cost. Senator Chambers, what's your reaction? Do you think this is good news for Ireland?
Yeah, I think it's a really challenging issue, and it's not just a challenge for Ireland in terms of dealing with migration. And people are migrating because they're desperate and they're fleeing either war, conflict, climate change, and for economic reasons as well. So I think this is something that we're going to be dealing with for some time to come. It's not going to reverse engines. The Migration Pact took a decade to negotiate at an EU level. So it was a long, long protracted negotiation among member states, and was, as you said, agreed by the European Parliament just before the end of the previous term, before the new MEPs came into office. And Ireland, as you said, have opted in. I think with an issue like this, my gut on it is that we're better off working with other countries rather than trying to go it alone. We only have to look across the water and see what happened with the UK. I mean, the Brexit happened mainly because of migration. And since they left the European Union, they've had more migrants than ever landing on their shores. So there's no easy solution to this, even though you'll hear the quick one-liners from the Tory party, who are about to be wiped out in the election because of their mishandling of things domestically. So I just think, you know, if we weren't in the group in the migration pact, there would be no incentive for other countries to stop people coming to our shores or to work with us or to provide information.
Yeah, but up until over the last 4 years of all the asylum applications into the EU, between 20 and 24, we had just over 1%, which is a big number, but it's a small number percentage wise. But that's going to increase because we have to do our fair share for those other countries that are the first port of call often for people fleeing some of the situations you described.
Yeah, I think, you know, the numbers moving globally is increasing. And as I said, that's not going to reverse engines. There's lots of reasons why that's happening. But, you know, I was at the EU Affairs Committee on Wednesday just gone, and we had representatives from TROCRA and Concern speaking to us. And the message they had was that conflicts globally there's more of them. They're becoming more complicated, more protracted. They're going on for longer. So just the global picture has changed. And then you've got climate change on top of that. So people are moving because they literally have nothing and they're desperate where they are. And that's not going to stop. It doesn't matter how many rules you put in place. People will still do whatever it takes.
But just before I bring the other guests in, you referenced Britain's experience. What does the majority of our, by the government's own figures, the majority of those seeking asylum in Ireland at the moment come from mainland Britain through Northern Ireland into the Republic. What does the EU Migration Pact do to deal with the 80-odd percent by the government's own figures of people crossing the border into Donegal or wherever it might be and claiming asylum here? It does nothing.
I wouldn't say it does nothing. I mean, obviously the UK are not part of the EU Migration Pact because they're not part of the EU. But we do have a working relationship with the UK through the European Union. And there are rules and agreements in place. And then with the UK and Ireland, we have the Common Travel Agreement.
But Rishi Sunak says he's not taking a single person back until France starts taking people back.
Yeah, no, he does. And obviously, we reject that position that they would somehow be using their challenges with France to take a particular action with Ireland. What I will say is I don't think he'll be in office for much longer. And we would hope to have a more sensible adult in the room in terms of a British Prime Minister to work with. And that's it appears it'll be Keir Starmer that we'll be dealing with the incoming government. So look, that is an issue. And we don't have an easy solution to people coming from mainland Great Britain in through Northern Ireland.
Which are the majority. So in other words, the EU Migration Pact, which does include us giving over quite a significant amount of our sovereignty and locking into that.
No, the sovereignty issue, no. I mean, that's some of the kind of lines you'll hear, or we're giving away our sovereignty. What we're doing is working with other countries to deal with the challenge that affects all of us. Because going
we are giving away decisions. The word sovereignty obviously then has stronger connotations for some than others.
Yeah.
We are giving away, future decision-making powers.
We're giving away to who, Greg?
To Brussels, like, to the EU.
We're at the decision-making table. We're in Brussels. We have a commissioner. We have our Taoiseach attends European Council meetings. We have MEPs. So we're actually part of that decision-making process. We're at the table.
Okay.
The UK is not at the table. And as I said, they left the European Union mainly because of migration and lots of other, I suppose, things that were mentioned. But their migration numbers have gone up.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at America. Remember Trump's line, build the wall? There's no wall. Their migration numbers are up as well. So people will find ways to move. If you don't put a structure in place and try and find a way to manage it properly, it's not going to go away. It'll just be more chaotic and more disruptive.
Right.
So I think working together is the only show in town from my perspective.
Okay. And just one final question. We have rules and regulations in place here already. You know, we have the gift to do with what we wish at the moment within sort of international law with immigration asylum seekers. We aren't capable, it would seem, of properly implementing that in terms of deportations and screening and all that kind of stuff. We would still be responsible for implementing the new way of operating under the EU Migration Pact. How can the public have any confidence that we will correctly implement elements of the EU Migration Pact when we aren't actually currently properly running the asylum system?
Well, there's a couple of things in that. First of all, you know, just to deal with the suggestion that we can somehow close down the country and people will never be allowed to get in or out. You know, we've signed up to the UN Convention on the Rights of the Refugee and we're part of the European Union. So I think if you want to go down that road, do you want to leave the UN? Do you want to leave the
UN? I never said anything.
No, I'm just dealing with kind of the comments I've heard over longer periods. I think sometimes people say things that sound really easy and simple and black and white, and they're far from it. But, you know, we do actually deport people on an annual basis, and we actually deport citizens of the European Union sometimes where they've committed an offence. So we do deport people and we do send people back. You know, have we gotten everything right to date? I don't think we have, but I don't think we've done too badly either.
Okay.
And we are dealing with extraordinary numbers that have increased at a rate that nobody could have foreseen. The vast majority due to the war in Ukraine. And I think people supported Ireland, you know, supporting the Ukrainian people dealing with that. So that's been the bulk of the numbers, really, has been people fleeing Ukraine. And look, in terms of that conflict, we had hoped at the start it would only be 6 months, maybe a year, and that things would go back to normal, whatever normal is.
Mm-hmm.
But that just hasn't happened.
But in relation
happened.
To dealing with the problem with the Ukraine coming up to the local elections, the government recognised that was an issue.
They did.
Cut money, cut accommodation, all actions that could be taken from Ireland, within Ireland, to deal with issues. So my point just being that if we do identify a problem and it's important to fix it, we do seem to be able to find ways of doing it without signing into an EU-wide pact. But that's a bigger question. Ali Farron, good morning to you. Having listened to the questions put to Lisa and Lisa's responses and whatever is floating around in your own head, what's your view?
Lots of things float around my head, as you know, Greg. But the EU Migration Pact, it's something that hasn't been high on my agenda, to be fair, over this last while, but it's always tripping in and tripping out. As regards being a member of Europe, I'm very, very happy to be a member of Europe. I love going with my Irish passport and getting through all the immigrants. So, and, you know, we do have to suck up certain things. The only problem I would have with Ireland or the Irish government at times is that they jump on board everything without, you know, I think from memory that we were allowed to opt out of this pact. And I understand what Lisa was saying. It's better to be involved as a you know, as a group, which I agree with. But sometimes we take it on more than maybe others, and I'd be afraid of that. That makes sense.
I get you. Grania Hines, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. I had a problem with my laptop. I'm on the phone.
Oh, that's fantastic. I would have been devastated if you couldn't have joined us. You are perhaps a little bit behind the curve in that we've been talking about Ireland finally opting into the EU Asylum and Migration Pact by a narrow enough margin in the Dáil. Is this something that you're in favour of or opposed to, I wonder?
Well, I'm in favour of it because I feel, look at what we're doing at the moment, it isn't working. We're not doing a very good job, I don't think. And I think that we have to have solidarity with Europe. It's a European problem, and we're part of Europe. So therefore, cooperation and coordination between the groups, I think, is essential. And I don't think we can tackle it on our own. We do need clear heads from different opinions and cultures. So I am very much in favour. I don't think we should opt out of anything. And I feel that it is a fair system. And we there's a policy, a definite policy to be followed. And then we are under obligation to provide proper accommodation when they come in, to police it, to police our borders, perhaps. I think that's always a problem, but we have to do something about that so that the people who deserve to come here are here and that we treat them well. I think it's very important that we opt into it so that we can get help with this. Because at the minute, I mean, our system is not working. So we're going to have to do something different. It puts an obligation now on the government to provide the proper centres for processing the people who come in, and in a humanitarian and fair way, and people, and to have a legal pathway for citizenship and for to be able to work here. And I think that's the solution that we're looking for. I mean, there's 200 million, 100 million people worldwide have been displaced because of conflict, climate change, violence, human rights violations, etc. And this thing about, you know, that we're losing our sovereignty, like, does that mean now that Israel and Russia can do what they like and no other country should interfere?
Well, I think what people might be concerned of is that as part of, say, for instance, as an example, as part of being a member of the EU, we signed up to the Common Fisheries Policy. And some European countries have done very, very well out of that. And the argument is that Ireland has not done very well out of that and continues to not do very well out of that. And then we're told that, well, our voice is too small in Europe to secure any better quotas for Irish fishermen and what have you. And now we're to believe, are we, that we sign up to another plan, this is to deal with migration, and that will be treated incredibly fairly, and it's better to be part of a big team. I'm just saying that some might say historically, it seems to be that when we join into these, you know, group way of dealing with things, that actually Ireland gets the short end of the stick.
Well, I don't think that's true at all. I think you're probably saying the same thing.
No, it's demonstrably true that Ireland are being mistreated in the context of fishing quotas, for an example.
Yeah, well, the fishing now, well, that is a separate issue. And I think that's bad negotiations. And I think that you sit down and talk and you fight your corner and eventually you will be heard, and you are heard. And the people we have representing us are strong. And if they're not strong, then the government have to step in and manage them. But like in this issue, this is human beings we're talking about. These are people who are not coming here because they love us or they want to leave their own country, leave their families. I mean, I have worked in third world for many years, and I can see why people are leaving, and I can see the problems they're facing at home. Mm-hmm. And they're not bad people.
No, I'm not saying that for a second, but we have a responsibility too as well to make sure that what we are providing people fleeing is actually... is nice for them,
yes.
i.e. we're talking about building five or six centres. We know what direct provision has been like in this country for many, many years. Who is to say that this will be any better? Do you know what I'm on about? Like, I get what you're saying, but we also, this is not about this is not about saying no one comes here, but I mean, it's about saying that we also can make sure that we, you know, treat people fairly when they come here.
But the fact is that we will have to
face fines.
That's what the pact is
all
about.
We're getting fines for polluting our water. We're getting fines for our wind farms. We're getting fines left and right and centre from Europe because we aren't doing things correctly.
Well, I think in this instance we will be. We had to do things correctly when the bust went and we got the loans of all the billions. We had to do things correctly, and we will have to do things correctly now because. This is under the supervision of 27 countries.
Okay.
So we will have to step up.
Okay, Lisa, last word for you on that. I mean, do you agree with Granny? Do you take my point as it relates to other sort of, you know, pacts that we've entered into that have been disadvantageous to Ireland? I'm not conflating people and fish, please. I hope that doesn't come across like that. I'm on about the administration. Sort of in the fairness of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a fair point around the common fisheries policy, and there's, you know, there are inequalities in terms of quota. Now, they were negotiated back in the 70s and 80s, and they can only be changed by a two-thirds majority vote at council level, and that's the challenge there. Whereas I think we're heading into, you know, a pact that's been 10 years in negotiation now in recent years. And I just think if people are saying we should opt out, I would say, well, how does that make things better? And we have a very clear example with our next door neighbour, where opting out has made their country poorer. It has made their people poorer, and their migration numbers have gone up. So we actually have evidence to show that going it alone is not a good idea. And, you know, people say we're losing our decision making role. We are actively sitting at the table and part of that decision making process. And I just think that's the strongest position to be in. There will be a budget to deal with this. We will have access to information on people that are moving around. And I just think we have to be honest with people and say people are fleeing because they are desperate. That will not change. It doesn't matter what one-liners you feed to people around borders and what can be done and what can't. And I think a more honest conversation in some quarters would be more helpful in terms of actually managing this and communicating better to people as to why we're doing this and why it's better for Ireland. I just think we're better off in the club, part of the team, working with others. That's where our strength will be.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting point that you make in that it often gets lost in the extremes of an argument, in that not signing up to this pact does not mean all of a sudden that people aren't migrating and that all of a sudden Ireland won't have lots of people landing in this country seeking asylum. I mean, that it would be naive to think that that would be the case, I think. But anyway, we'll be back with more from our panel after this quick break. There are calls on the Minister for Justice to announce a review of sentencing practices, particularly in respect of the use of suspended sentences for violent crimes. It follows outrage after a 22-year-old soldier who received a fully suspended sentence for viciously assaulting Limerick woman Natasha O'Brien. He later boasted about that assault on social media. This week, Natasha O'Brien urged victims of crime not to come forward as she criticised Justice Minister Helen McEntee for living under a rock. I'm not sure that's necessarily the best advice, but who am I to speak to? I wasn't the victim of this assault, but I think it's always best if people do come forward. What do you think needs to be done, Grainne Hynes, member of the Letterkenny Active Retirement Group? Your views on this, please.
Needs to be done is to condemn this terrible assault on Natasha, and and the uprise in violence and sexual violence and physical violence against people who are weaker than you, not even to women. I mean, that guy that attacked Natasha, he didn't square up to a 6-foot strong male. He picked somebody he knew was weaker. And this is the cause of bullying in schools and everything. These people are targeting people who they think are weaker than them. So it's a culture of power, giving themselves power and control. And right across Europe at the minute, there is a great lot of young men who have become actually more conservative than you could imagine, and moving to the right, or the far right even. And females seem to become more liberal. And this is a challenge to the power and the control that the male species have had over people for many centuries. And I think this is something we have to look into. And I don't know how we're going to do it. I think things like the army, of course, have to completely stop having people who are supposed to be protecting us and be somebody, people we look up to, entering the army. And that I'm sure will be dealt with by the government. I think they're quite strong in that, and it will be dealt with. And there is a good number of people in the army who will support the government on that.
I would say it's taken 50-odd years for the Women of Honour Tribunal to begin this week. So hopefully the wheels move quicker.
I think it will.
But just in terms of sentencing, I mean, people can pull up obvious examples, and they are glaringly obvious, of people imprisoned, you know, for non-violent crimes. And then we have a situation where someone can commit such a violent crime. And what I found quite interesting in the summation from the judge in this case was is that all the mitigation was really as it relates to the perpetrator, the person responsible, and not actually the victim. It was about what might the impact be on he, what might the impact be on his career. Yet the lady in question had already lost her career effectively because of this assault. So is there anything with the judiciary that needs to be done, do you think, Grania?
Certainly. I actually think they need some type of special training by psychologists to look at these issues. And I think it is not fair. It is not just what they did. It is not justice. I mean, there is no fairness without proper justice. And I think they're not. You can see it all the time. You can see somebody stealing a loaf and they're put in Mountjoy for 6 months. Like, it doesn't make sense. And people are not happy with it. And I certainly feel that there's a lot to be done, and it has to be tackled by the government, by the Minister of Justice.
Councillor Ali Farron, I mean, I don't think any man really should be comfortable with this person getting a suspended sentence. I mean, there's a lot of direction stuff. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that Spider-Man meme. I'm not even sure if you're familiar with memes, if the truth be honest.
No, I'm not.
But anyway, it's an image of pointing in all direct directions. In other words, distraction stuff. You know what I mean? So I've noticed quite a few men are trying to distract away from the actions of this person by saying, yeah, but what about this and what about that and what about the other? I think as a society, we're all better off if we see, you know, where there are problems and where we see resolutions that need to be found.
Right. I have two daughters, and first and foremost, so I wouldn't hate to think of anything happening to them and somebody getting away with that type of a sentence. But we read every week about judges handing out, you know, sentences which don't fit the crime simply because, you know, like that was on a night out in 22 years ago. And of course, the judge probably, and I don't know the ins and outs of the full case, but around here, then somebody speaks up and says, oh, he's changed his life around and he's going to be the greatest person ever now. And he's, you know, but this person probably has a rake of convictions, and they get off because of somebody saying, you know, he's going to be better. And we know from experience, a lot of these people are repeat offenders, and they keep coming back to they're back again in the courts the next month again, and it'll be again, he's going to do really better the next time. So we need to nip these things at the bud. We need to have a more, you know, we need to be a bit harsher maybe on some people, especially the repeat offender. And I was listening during the week there on another radio station. Sorry, Greg.
It's all right.
And they were talking about, you know, our jails are full, and that's probably hampering the judges. But, you know, we could fine people more. It could hit them more in the pocket, and be sorer on them that way. And we don't need to ironically, in
this case, the argument was being made that we'd be taking money from this soldier's pocket by giving him a custodial sentence and robbing him of his career. So it's actually almost, in this particular case, and I know you're speaking generally, quite the opposite of that. The judge didn't want to take away his ability to earn a living.
Listen, as I said, I'm not... I wouldn't be up to date on that.
No,
on
I know, but I'm just case. Saying but that's how far we have to go between where we're at and where you think we should be going, Ali, is really the point I was trying to make.
Well, I do think, you know, people being hit in the pocket is far more beneficial for the first few offences. You know, £100 fine, they spend that in a night out. It's not sore enough for some of the first offences. I know maybe going down the road, when I was born, if I'd done something wrong, my mother hit me a good hard slap. And right. I know there'll be people then phoning in now saying, oh, I was abused. Certainly wasn't. But I knew then not to do it a second time. And, you know, this is the offence. If the punishment's not fit or not severe enough, then they'll do it again.
Yeah. Darren on Facebook says, 16-year-old girl sexually assaulted on a plane from Manchester by a 60-year-old foreign man. He got a suspended sentence. Judge said the girl had to put up with 45 minutes of hassle. Was that justice? I could cite numerous more cases. This is all Irish men bad again, foreign men good. And I really don't understand that argument because that's a horrendous case as well. This is a particular case where the victim spoke out and she gave a face and a voice to a victim. And also the fact that this, because of the sentence that was involved and the fact that this person was a member of the army, of course this doesn't mean that one group of individuals are good and the other individuals are bad. That is the meme I'm talking about, where it's almost just trying to detract from this case that we're talking about. Your reaction, Senator Chambers? Sorry, you're muted, Lisa, I beg your pardon.
Sorry, Greg. I'm just appalled at that Facebook comment. No one's suggesting that issue on a plane is okay, but it's not. It's completely irrelevant, you know, what nationality a person is. Look at it on the face of it. I mean, the suspended sentence argument, this has come up this week in the chamber quite a lot. A lot of members raising it that we need to look at this. Suspended sentences have a place in our justice system, and often you'll have part of a sentence suspended. So maybe they'll get 3 years with the final year suspended. And there is a place for, we do, as part of encouraging people to plead guilty early on and avoid the trauma of a trial, we do give, acknowledgement of an early guilty plea. And usually it reduces the sentence by about 25%. So my previous career was as a lawyer, so this is my other background. It's difficult, though, to understand the logic of this reasoning, where you've got a very serious assault, where the defendant not only knocked a girl unconscious, unprovoked, but actually boasted about it afterwards on social media, saying two to put her down and two to put her out. And it shows the mentality of that individual, that they knew what they were doing and that there was no remorse and that they dehumanized the victim. And all of that, despite the mitigating factors, I think the judge placed too much weight on the job that the defendant was doing. I should say the convicted criminal now, that, you know, so acknowledging that once you get a custodial sentence, you are out of the defence forces and you'll never get back in again. So I think he placed too much weight on that was too big a price for him to pay for what he did. And I acknowledge that he was young and that he's made a very severe mistake in his life that has now altered the course of his life. But the victim should take precedence in this situation. And I think she was re-traumatized during that process, where the judge basically told her, you should be happy that you didn't have to go through the trial. And, you know, that's a positive aspect, that she didn't have to go through a trial process. But to be told that that was sufficient to meet the justice requirements on her side, I think was really wrong.
And I think it was only really once CCTV was put on the table that the trial actually was avoided at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence there to show that he knew what he was doing. He was not remorseful at the time and that he disregarded the victim's anything to do with her. So I think, you know, the public have spoken on this, and the response, as Grawny said, I mean, people are very upset by this. And I think that judge will probably, I mean, I don't know, but I'm sure he's regretting his decision And I can understand the acknowledgement of the early guilty plea, but I don't see how that would negate the need to serve any sort of custodial sentence. But I think Grainne is right. It speaks to a wider cultural issue. And, you know, we could be all day picking through this, but there's been a shifting in terms of roles for men and women in society. And I think for a lot of younger men, they're struggling with their place in the world because women now are doing what would have been traditionally men's jobs. There is that kind of, I suppose, push for equality at all levels. And that has caused issues that we just need to deal with. And I don't know how we deal with those. And I think the increase in violence against women in particular is hugely concerning. And we have a zero tolerance approach, or we're supposed to have a zero tolerance approach. And the sentence that was handed down to Prati did not match the policy within the country. And people had a real issue with that. So I think we do need training for the judiciary, because maybe there is a generational issue there as well, around the unconscious bias that might exist within some judges, where they don't see on a par the suffering of the victim as opposed to the loss of the potential of the defendant and the potential criminal. So there's a lot to unpick there, pick there, Greg, but I think...
Would you favour a review of the sentencing practices, though? I mean, maybe there's not... Or as I say, you're the expert in this regard, sentencing guidelines. I mean, we don't need new rules and regs, do we? I mean, the scope is there. He could have sent him to jail.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was a sentence of up to 5 years in prison. So the scope was there. It was his logic and his reasoning that I have an issue with. And it's how he managed to reconcile in his own mind that the loss to the criminal, that the person that's been convicted of the offence, was too great to give him a custodial sentence. It's how he managed to think that way. And it's that we need to address, I think, through training. You know, I think the legislation that was in place is fine. There's no need to change that. I think it's more about guiding the judiciary as to how to assess the impact on the victim. And that can happen through training. And I do think that that's needed.
And of course, this is a very high profile case, but I've been particularly worried at the amount of suspended sentences, mostly handed down to men, it has to be said, in possession of child abuse images as well. I mean, this is a case that has obviously really hit the headlines, and rightly so, but I would love if more of those very, very, very lenient sentences for having the most despicable child abuse material, if that was also highlighted as well. But Ali, just as a fella, if you know what I mean, like, do you understand why there seems to be some men become threatened by this conversation? This week, we've seen figures from Women's Aid and other organisations showing a very significant increase in violence towards women. Donegal Domestic Violence Services have an inexplicable increase in people that they're dealing with in the first 4 months of this year. And yet what I've seen on social media, the cesspit that it is actually a lot of people victim-blaming Natasha O'Brien for speaking out, for having the audacity to speak out. I mean, do we as men, and we as a society generally speaking, need to call this out a little bit more though, Ali? You know, especially as a father of daughters, to say that, you know, hold on a second, this doesn't mean all men are bad, but we certainly have to shine a light on those that are bad and discourage this type of behaviour for them and future generations.
Look, it's the same in every community. There's good and bad in all, and it's the same in male and female. But your question, you know, we're all made different. We all act differently. There might be an issue at the moment. When I was growing up, it was either a Coke and a Fanta or a pint of a Smithwick's or a pint of Guinness. And there were fights and arguments in different dance halls and pubs and way back then. Our social life has changed a lot in the last while. There's you'll talk to any doorman or person working in pubs, and especially in busy areas, the biggest problem's not drink now, it's another problem. And, you know, that can affect how well or how people of both sexes behave. And, you know, we're in a different environment, but I'm not saying it's right, because it's not. But, you know, again, back to the problem, it's allowed happen on a regular basis in every town, and probably Donegal, and this weekend will be no different. But, you know, you'll have bother probably getting a guard to make a statement to, you'll bother getting the guard station open to you know, to and if you make the statement, then it could be 2 to 3, 4 years of your life waiting on to take that case to court. So, you know, it doesn't encourage, you know, a delivery, a system. So like, if it happened to you that tonight or this weekend, you know, it should be in the courts in the next month or 2 months so that you can get on with your life. Mm-hmm. And if some lady or a daughter of mine or somebody else made a complaint tonight about something like that, you could be talking, you know, years before it's
It's too long, but I think, I think even the likes of this case that we're talking about, there is a level of complexity there that, you know, you couldn't turn it around in short shift, because that would probably obviously give the accused an opportunity. But I take your point. Grania, thanks patiently. You wanted to come back in there.
Yeah, what I'm saying is it's the level of violence, like this punching in the head. Like, I think long ago, children were told you can fight, but don't hit anybody in the head, don't kick them in certain places. And I think there should be an instant take money off them, take it off their work, 10% for 6 months, if they kick or if they hit anybody around the head. And this taking out of knives and stabbing, like it's as if they have no respect for their other human beings. And I think the culture has got very violent, really. And I just find it's difficult to think about how society no longer have tolerance or kindness. There's no live and let live. It's yourself. And if you disagree with somebody and you don't even vocally disagree, you want to push the other person down, knock them out, stab them. I mean, what sort of, it's something that needs to be tackled from when children are tiny.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think too, with an awful lot of stuff that people can access on the internet, and to a lesser extent, but I'm not ruling out video games, I think there's a desensitization going on there, in that, mm-hmm. you know, hitting someone in the head, knocking them to the ground is not really seen as a shock or oh my God, what have I done? No. Because people have been sort of conditioned a little bit to have seen that. I don't know. I always tried to keep my boys away from that stuff.
If you touch a guard or even push his hand or anything, you're accused of assault. And yet these people can bang each other about and nothing happens. There's no zero tolerance of that violence.
All right,
on
okay. Listen, we'll be back in 4 minutes. Go ahead, Ali. Go ahead, please. Yep.
Years ago, growing up again, a guard, you couldn't touch them. You know, they were unarmed and they got the respect. Nowadays, that respect's not there. The community doesn't respect the guard to the same level that they should. You know.
And why is that? Is that because people are constantly criticising the government, criticising the guards, criticising anybody who does something?
I think we just live in a very different world now, and there's a narrative out there that the Gardaí don't work for the people, they work for the government, and the Gardaí was sent out to be the face really of COVID regulations. There seem to be the face of opposing demonstrations that take place.
Do you think that the youth of today don't want anybody telling them what to do?
I don't know. I don't think it's the youth.
I know we were all like that when we were young, but we did respect people. We worked for respected authority. I think that has that culture.
A lot of the people that are getting on Natasha's back on social media and elsewhere are dads and maybe granddads as well. You know, I don't think it's just a new generation coming through. We'll be back with more from our guests and your comments too after these. The conversation on the level of female representation in politics continues. As we know, just 8% of Donegal County councillors are women. The main parties have been criticised for not doing more in this regard. So with that in mind, this week, Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin, well, I suppose you could say he had an opportunity, but he announced Michael McGrath's nomination to Europe, of course. Jack Chambers then elevated to finance, Derek Leary up to a super junior, and good news too for James Lawless as well. Is this a missed opportunity to promote women at the highest level, I wonder, Lisa Chambers, and a sign of how far yet we have to go?
Look, I think in politics overall, we do need to increase representation. Like in my own council here in Mayo, we're well below where we'd like to be. We only have 3 female representatives out of 30. So, you know, I think overall the political system, we're making great efforts, and I think everyone's in agreement. We'd love to see more women coming into politics. But actually, with the coarseness that's coming into Irish political life, and, you know, the online space becoming a bit more tricky, if I can put it that way, we're finding women are more reluctant.
That's why I thought it was an opportunity. This is not a criticism of Micheál Martin. There's obviously other reasons. But I mean, you know, you can be it if you see it. This was an opportunity maybe to elevate some really strong women to some really good positions. You know, obviously maybe settling old scores, geography and other things might be at play here too, but I just thought it could have been an opportunity to maybe inspire those women that are reluctant to get into politics to show that, you know what, you can achieve.
Look, I'll always support the promotion of my female colleagues, and I'd love to see people, you know, getting that extra opportunity. But yeah, we do have Norma Foley at Cabinet. I'm the leader of the Fianna Fáil group in the Seanad and leader of the Seanad. And we do have 2 junior ministers, Mary Butler and Anne Rabbitt. So it's not that we don't promote women. Of course we do. Michael McGrath was selected as our next EU commissioner, coming out of the finance brief, because the feeling is he has probably the best chance of any of the cabinet ministers of getting a really good job in terms of the commission for our country. So I can completely understand that appointment. And it's really kind of minor movements then after that. Obviously, Jack Chambers has gone into finance. That's a fairly significant movement. But then after that, you're kind of moving some juniors around. And there probably isn't a whole lot of time left in this government as well. So there wasn't a huge amount of scope either for movement.
I'll get to you. Okay, I just wanted your insight into that. But we'll talk about Michael McGrath, because it's all tied into EU leaders nominating current European Commission head Ursula von der Leyen for a second 5-year term in the bloc's top job. This is with the support of Taoiseach Simon Harris, of course. Irish MEPs then are being urged to later vote in favour of Ms von der Leyen to help Michael McGrath nab a significant portfolio as commissioner. Now, is this a sticky wicket for Fianna Fáil? There has been criticism from within its MEP ranks over Ms von der Leyen's stance on the genocide accusations facing Israel over its war in Gaza. And we do remember, too, how outspoken she was on all of our behalf, in inverted commas, at the beginning of this invasion. I mean, is this a sellout from the Taoiseach, from Ireland, given our stance in Gaza, that we are prepared to back someone that we have a different position to, just so that Michael McGrath can get a nice job as a commissioner? Grania, do you think?
I think you're misjudging Ursula von der Leyen, because she did apologise about that and she did explain her stance. And she certainly is not pro what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. She also, of course, is not pro Hamas. So she is trying to look at it from two sides. And I think all her sympathies would be more.
Do you believe currently what's happening in Gaza? You think there are two sides to that argument?
No, I don't think there's really two definite sides. But you have to look at it for a solution to any problem. You have to look at all the sides, whether they're. Whether you disagree with them or not, or whether you despise them, you have to look at it and you have to try and bring them into the fold, as we did with the IRA, we did with the unionists. You have to sit down and listen to everybody. And what's happening in Gaza is absolutely appalling and despicable and very hard to understand, that a people who were so badly treated themselves now can turn around and almost do the same thing to another group of people.
Yeah,
now,
but just in relation to Ms von der Leyen, she offered unqualified support for Israel and its government in the aftermath of that awful atrocity, which has to be condemned in early October. And following from that, you could argue that sort of empowered Israel, with the backing of Europe effectively, to go into Gaza and everything that's followed it. So I think you're being perhaps unreasonably favourable to...
No, I feel the help that Europe are giving to Palestinians is enormous. And I don't think you can condemn the Europe for what they're doing. They're helping Ukraine, they're helping Palestinians. They're very sympathetic to them. But okay, she could be wrong in that issue. But I think, as far as I know, she did back down a lot on her ideas on that.
Yes, but her initial stance could well have set the stage, the green light, right, effectively, for where we're at. Yeah, just want to point out to Grania that Fianna Fáil MEPs, unless they've changed the position, certainly in the last few days or the last last weeks or whatever have indicated they may not support Ms. von der Leyen in that vote. Go ahead, Lisa, sorry.
Yeah, so I mean, I suppose the Ursula von der Leyen will become Commission President mainly because she's a member of the European People's Party, which are the largest party in European level. And Fine Gael are members of the European People's Party. My party, Fianna Fáil, are members of ALDE Renew. We're the fourth largest grouping. So it kind of comes down to numbers, really. And same as if you're electing a Taoiseach here in Ireland, which party has the biggest numbers. So she'll be the nominee on that front. And
yeah, but Leo Varadkar come out and said quite clearly that Irish MEPs, regardless of which party they are a member of, should vote for Ursula von der Leyen because it means Michael McGrath might get a better job. I'm just wondering in the broader conversation of what is happening in the Middle East, should we not be maybe taking some sort of a stance or?
So bear in mind that other member states do not have the exact same position as Ireland. We're one of the most pro-Palestinian countries.
Yes, exactly.
Most pro. So other member states would have a slightly different view to ourselves. And that's part of that context. Leo could be correct in suggesting that if all MEPs in Ireland voted for Ursula von der Leyen, she might be more favourable towards Michael McGrath. But then he would be supporting her because he's a member of the European People's Party, as is she. The Fianna Fáil MEPs were clear. They will not be voting for her. Whether or not that impacts on what portfolio Michael McGrath gets, we just won't know. It's very difficult to know. And I think, as a state, we're putting forward Michael McGrath. Him coming from a finance background, having been the Minister of Finance and Public Expenditure, it does put him in a strong position because of his experience to get a decent portfolio. And
do you think we've any questions to ask morally about our stance on this, given our stance on Gaza, given Ursula von der Leyen's stance and her history and the green light she gave, some would feel, to the Israeli government? So I understand the politics of it and who's members, but morally, in a brief answer, if possible, morally, do we have any inward looking to be doing?
Well, I think like the vote happens in the European Parliament, so that's where like the MEPs will do their own thing.
Yeah, but we voted them to represent us.
Exactly. So that's why I think you'll see. I don't think you'd see all the Irish MEPs voting the same way on this. And I think you will see the Fine Gael MEPs as members of the European People's Party backing their woman because she's a member of their party. Mm. And I think you'd probably see all the other Irish MEPs vote against her. That'd be my anticipation. Okay. And whether or not that impacts on Michael McGrath's opportunities in terms of portfolios remains to be seen. But I mean, the MEPs will do what they want to do on that front.
Ali, a quick word from you. We're just right up against the clock.
Yeah, well, you came after the ad break asking about women in politics and one thing or another, and then you ended up in Palestine, and then you went to Europe. But locally here, when we set up the 100% Redress Party, we had plenty of women involved, but getting them to run and put their name on a poster was very, very difficult. We nearly had to sit on top of Joy Baird to make her, and to be fair to Joy, the amount of abuse and people, maybe because she was a woman, that they tended to send her a lot more messages that were more intimidating to her than they were to the rest of the fellas that was in the. So yeah, we need to do better. And Donegal, we would love the redress. Looking for redress has been mainly women that has been driving this bus, and yet it's the men that had to put their name on the ballot paper, whereas we have some fantastic women in Donegal and we would love to see them running in local elections and have a different voice.
Hear, hear. Thank you so much for that, Ali. I do appreciate it. Thanks to Councillor Ali Farran, Senator Lisa Chambers and Grainne Hines, all three of you. Have a wonderful weekend and take care. I'll get to all of your comments after we take a break now for the news and obituary notices, which will be just a couple of minutes late. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.